Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I just felt like I lost a family member. And I asked them as I was walking by, please don't let this be the end of Camelot.
He certainly has made such a difference in Boston. You can feel how much he's loved here.
Even though everyone expected and everyone knew he was on his way out, losing Ted Kennedy is just a huge loss to all of New England, to the Senate, to the country.
Mourners passing by the casket of Ted Kennedy in Boston yesterday, as recorded by NPR. His funeral is tomorrow. We'll talk about the legacy and the future of healthcare legislation because of Ted Kennedy and without Ted Kennedy in a minute with Pete Hamill and Shayla Murray from The Washington Post. But people are saying today that now that they've all passed, that Ted Kennedy, ironically, may have been the most important Kennedy, not just because he lived so much longer, but because even without becoming president or attorney general like his brothers, he managed to accomplish so much. And I want to play a clip. This is about a minute and a half of an interview with Charlie Rose. Charlie Rose interviewing Ted Kennedy just 2 years ago that addresses that. And it begins with Charlie Rose's question.
Despite a history of accomplishments in legislation, many have said, some have speculated, that what you have been able to do in a legislative career is perhaps more important than you could have done as president. Leave that to others to say. Right. I just put it on the table. Tell me what you hope to accomplish now in terms of health care, in terms of other important social issues.
Well, the average family are concerned about, and without getting into it, be long, trying to keep this answer short, in areas where I can be most active is in the areas of health and in the areas of education, the areas of employment, and the areas of research, the NIH research. I'm a great believer we're in the life science century. We have seen the opportunities there with the...
So therefore,
I want progress in stem cell, progress in terms of the life sciences. I want to try and make sure that we are going to equip every child in this country to be able to deal individually with the challenges of globalization. Every child, everyone, not just states, not communities, every child, every person to be able to deal with that individually in terms. That's what our education process, ongoing, continuing, starting very early, continuing. An educational system that really is the second to none. And then, obviously, the health care. I've supported 10 different bills. I've been a single payer, a payer player, going back for 35 years. I'm hopeful that finally in 2008 we're going to elect someone that's going to actually get universal health care. And I hope Bobby will be around long enough to be able to be a strong supporter and help him to get him through the Congress.
You seem in pretty good shape to me.
And how poignant and ironic the end of that exchange is today. That was only 2 years ago. Kennedy laughing about how he hopes to be around to see the end of the health care debate after the 2008 election. Charlie Rose saying, you look in pretty good shape to me. It really reminds us how fragile life can be. Who would have guessed? Certainly Ted Kennedy himself didn't guess that he would meet his end this quickly and in this way when they recorded that interview. So, listeners, do you ever wonder why this family, out of all the wealthy do-gooders in the world, became the icon that it did? And why Ted Kennedy is being heralded as the last liberal lion and the last great congressional negotiator? Are liberalism and legislative compromise really so dead? Let's talk with the writer and longtime newspaper man, Pete Hamill, friend of the Kennedy family. His latest novel is North River, by the way, and Shayla Murray, who covers Congress for The Washington Post. Pete, Shayla, welcome back to WNYC. Good morning, both of you.
Good morning, Brian.
Good morning.
Pete Hamill, you were friends with Robert Kennedy during his last few years of life in the 1960s. Did you also know Ted?
I did, but not obviously not as well. After Bobby got killed, I was one of the people who said to himself, I can't be a reporter and a friend of a politician at the same time. It doesn't mean that I have to be an adversary, but I have to back away. I had made a mistake becoming friends with Bob Kennedy because you learn things that you can't report. I don't mean shameful or dirty or anything, things that are learned, but reporters should be reporters and not
friends. So I knew Teddy across the years after that. I did some pieces on him. But I wouldn't count myself as a friend.
And certainly nobody can really predict anything. But in the so-called Camelot days, when John Kennedy was president, Bobby was attorney general, and Ted Kennedy was just a 30-year-old junior senator.
Right.
Did he have that passion for the issues that we have come to know him for, or was he more going along for the ride and the family business and kind of dwarfed by his more famous siblings?
Well, I don't know. It's why I want to read his memoir. I couldn't begin to project into his mind what he was feeling at 30, whether he was in on a pass because of his name or not. We don't know. The fact is, though, that he became a master of retail politics. When I went around with him once when he was running for office, an election he was sure to win up in Massachusetts, I was knocked over by the professionalism of the campaign. Every campaign stop, he had a sheet of paper with the name of the local politician, whether it's a mayor or a congressman or whatever, the number of people in the community, the number on welfare, the number unemployed, the status of the principal business in the town, whether it was rocky or prospering. It was unbelievable advance work by his staff because he was going after votes one at a time. If he helped somebody, he knew that he had that family for the rest of his life. I remember he went into some gymnasium one time, and it was packed with maybe a couple of thousand people. There was an old lady in the first row, and he went over to talk to her and talked to her for 10 minutes. And it wasn't calculated, and it wasn't a waste of time, because everybody saw him paying attention to this old lady. And that was what was more important than what the speech was about or what the issues were being discussed.
And we were getting calls like that the other day from people.
Yeah.
There was one guy who had a football injury back in the 60s, I guess, after Kennedy had been in a plane crash. And Kennedy wrote him a letter and told him to have hope. And then they corresponded, and this guy couldn't believe that Kennedy responded to him multiple times.
Right. Well, in my family, in 1968, right after the Tet Offensive, my brother John was in the Army in Vietnam. He was a medic, 18 years old, in the middle of the Central Highlands, and Ted Kennedy came to Vietnam. And I knew nothing about this. There was a request to send one John Hamill to play coup, get him shaved, clean up his uniform. And off he went, and there was Ted Kennedy in play coup, going to see John Hamill, because Bobby Kennedy said, Pete Hamill's brother's out there. Go see him when you're there.
Huh.
Now, and he saw my brother and two other kids from Massachusetts and sat in a place for 45 minutes asking them about the war and so on. Retail politics. I didn't know about it till it was all over.
Shayla Murray, for you as a congressional correspondent for The Washington Post, we heard Charlie Rose in that clip saying that maybe he's done more in legislation, Ted Kennedy, than he even could have accomplished if he was president. We have George Will and others in the last day writing that Ted Kennedy may have actually become the most important Kennedy, despite never having been president or attorney general. So maybe one lesson for young people hoping to go into politics and influence the system is that you don't have to become the boss. You can go into the legislation business, be one of 100 or be one of 435 in the House, take your ego out of it a little bit, and still have a huge impact.
Yes, and I think Senator Kennedy appreciated something about the Senate that even many members, many of his former colleagues, didn't, that there are limitations and that you have to learn how to work those limitations to your advantage. And he gave up ultimately on trying to pass a huge universal health care bill after the Clinton effort failed in 94 and began to try to pass things piecemeal. That was a successful strategy. And he was able to read and understand the contours of the Senate and the limitations of the Senate and accept them for what they were and work within those parameters. And I think that that's many of the lessons of Senator Kennedy are subtle ones. They're not. He was not a guy who sought a lot of attention as he went about his business. We have a lot of members of the Senate now who feed off of that attention and somehow think that that conveys into product. And Senator Kennedy understood that unless you send a bill to the president, you really haven't been successful.
Maybe he didn't need all that attention because he already was a Kennedy.
Well, that's another reality that a lot of us are absorbing right now, covered Congress for a while, that he really is one of the very few remaining, you know, members of a dynasty up here. It used to be the place was cluttered with folks like that, but it's not the case anymore, and it really did give an advantage to Senator Kennedy, because once he got involved in something, you knew to took it seriously. I mean, he was absolutely instrumental in two of the biggest achievements of President Bush's first term, the No Child Left Behind bill and the Medicare drug benefit. Those bills probably wouldn't have passed had they not caught the attention of Senator Kennedy early on, even though he didn't like the way the Medicare drug benefit came out in the end. It probably wouldn't have gone as far along in the process as it did.
So when people talk about him as one of the greatest lawmakers of all time for his ability to get legislation done, how much do you think the Kennedy aura was responsible for that and the influence that he had as a result? And how much was it just a very specific skill set that he developed and practiced?
Well, I think they sort of blended together. After the failed presidential effort, when he returned to the Senate and decided to reconstitute himself as a master lawmaker, I think he was smart and canny enough to use his stature to turn himself into a player in Congress, which is not an easy thing. This is a place where being around 40 years matters a lot more than whether you're necessarily all that smart or not. And he was able to take his, I mean, one of the best recent examples of this was when he endorsed then candidate Barack Obama for president. I mean, Senator Kennedy knew exactly what the force of that endorsement would be, and certainly so did Bill Clinton and all the other members of the Clinton, greater Clinton family who were trying to stop him from doing it on an almost minute-by-minute basis up until the point when it happened.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just no one else in public life who would have that kind of impact on a presidential race, and I was covering the Obama campaign at the time. It was literally like a lightning bolt. I mean, it just changed the entire landscape.
We'll continue in a minute with Shayla Murray and Pete Hamill, and when we do, we'll play another clip of Edward Kennedy reflecting on his childhood and his family, and we'll ask, why this family out of all the wealthy ones in America who want to do good? Stay with us. WNYC, as we talk about Ted Kennedy, the legacy, and also what may result from his last months and last year's work with respect to this health care legislation that's now going through Congress. My guests are congressional correspondent for The Washington Post, Shayla Murray, and writer, longtime New York newspaper man, friend of the Kennedy family, Pete Hamill. And let's play a clip. This is from a video on bigthink.com. We've posted it on our page, too. So if you want to go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show and see the whole thing, you can. But this is about half a minute of Ted Kennedy from just last year talking about his inspirations and the importance of his family and what it was like to be the youngest.
I was the youngest of nine, the last to come along. Sat at the little table on the side of the room, always had to battle to get my views across or to be able to express it. But I had extraordinary role models. My father, who was very ambitious for his children and was a great supporter. A mother who was the safe haven, devoted to her faith and also the love of history. My older brothers, who were great heroes of mine. and were inspiring figures all the way through my life.
And it sounds like it's from Ted Kennedy, the infomercial with that music. But there it is from BigThink.com. And our phones are open if you want to get in on the conversation at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or online at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer's show to post. Pete Hamill, have you thought much about the uniqueness of the family? He's talking about the family there, and there have been lots of rich American families. Others have also used their wealth for good causes, but the Kennedy family became this icon, so prominent, so symbolic, so activist, so loved and so hated, and just such celebrities. Why this family?
Well, I think it's because they did not forget where they came from. Even though they were children of privilege, there was a profound understanding among them that they came from people who arrived here two generations before with bupkis. Not an Irish word, by the way.
Yes, but translates
but
well.
They came impoverished Irish roots, and that those roots must not be forgotten. That's why they didn't end up in the Riviera getting stewed in a Scott Fitzgerald novel. They didn't do that. They became people who said, we have to help people who have less than we have. And I think that was a tremendously honorable thing. No matter what the flaws of Joe Kennedy and his ambitions, I think somehow that idea, I suspect maybe through Rose, was passed on to all those young people, and they responded to that in their own different styles. Jack was not like Bobby. Bobby was not like Teddy. Teddy was not like either of them. But they were certainly people who did not forget where they came from.
Seymour in Forest Hills wants to weigh in on the patriarch. Seymour, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yeah, I was just wondering, and of course I have no way of knowing if it's true, didn't Joe Kennedy have his origins for his wealth in bootlegging during the Prohibition era? And didn't he associate with all kinds of gangsters and low characters to develop his fortune?
Pete?
He was not coming across the St. Lawrence Seaway in a... But he was buying the supplies Canada and bringing them over. And he was rights to certain kinds of whiskeys in Scotland and Ireland. But that does not mean that he was a bootlegger. Bronfman family was doing the same thing. Because the law was the stupidest law that Americans had ever passed, bootlegger was not a dishonorable person. Great is a hero, not a villain.
And we're getting some gaps in your phone there, Pete. Hopefully that'll just clear itself up. But Joe in the Bronx has another theory about the Kennedys' public service and the relationship to Father Joe. Joe, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes, thanks for taking the call. Joe was a, I don't know if you want to put it in mild terms, an unsavory character. And he, vis-a-vis Rose, he didn't treat her the way he should have. And the kids, as a reaction, felt that they have to do something just to clear the family name. And therefore, all the programs that they did, all this public service, was a reaction to what the lousy character the father was.
Maybe some of that. I mean, it's, I'm sure it's too simplistic to reduce it all to that. But some of that, Pete, you have any way of knowing? Okay, I don't think you heard the question. Shayla, do you want to, this may be out of your beat, but any thought on that?
Well, you see, there are a number of motivations, I think, for people doing good deeds, and whether it's your family history. I think in the Kennedys' case, a lot of it is rooted in their particular brand of Irish Catholicism that I'm especially familiar with as well. I think there's a sense of that sense of public duty and public service is ingrained in the culture. I think it's why Ireland produces so many priests and missionaries, and I think this is sort of a variation of that. Certainly Senator Kennedy brought a morality, a sense of morality to his liberalism that I think, helped it to travel more effectively across party lines. And I think one of the reasons he was able to make such strong connections with so many Republicans, including many very conservative Republicans who he didn't really agree with on anything, was the fact that there was a shared sense of public duty, that there are certain people who fall through the cracks through no fault of their own, and that public servants are obligated to help these folks. I think that is why Senator Kennedy was so committed to causes like immigration and education and health care. All share that you know, all are particularly focused on people who can't help themselves, on people who have fallen through the cracks. It's not unlike what, you know, the sort of outlook of a parish priest.
I should have realized your Irish roots from your name. maybe you can respond to Pete from before and tell us, what is Irish for Bupkus?
Well, well,
nada.
nada, right.
Teresa is calling from Natick, Mass. She went to the wake yesterday. Teresa, thanks so much for calling a New York radio station.
Hello, I pulled over because I'm traveling to my cousin's wedding in Philadelphia. It was a beautiful wake. I was really impressed with Vicky's ability to greet all the people that went through. And this morning when I left, it was up to 21,000 people. And also Congressman Joe Kennedy and Robert Kennedy and Caroline and Christopher and Joe's twin sons and Robert's children. And
did you go because you have a relationship to the family, or just as an American who was inspired by them?
I'm the Natick Democratic Town Committee former chair, and I sit on the Massachusetts Democratic State Committee. I've been in the grassroots trenches with the senator since 1991 when I moved to Boston to get a PhD in economics from Boston College.
And you wanted to say something about why you think the family is so important?
They're important because it's not theoretical for the Kennedys. It's been decades of going back to Honey Fitz in Boston, grassroots politics at its basic neighborhood level. The senator never moved away from that. There isn't a town in Massachusetts where a family has not been helped by his office or personally by him. It was never theoretical for him. It was always hands-on. And you could really feel that in the wake and in the line yesterday. I met so many great people from New York City, from Maine, from parts of Massachusetts. And it was really simple, I think, for the senator. It was about helping. And, yes, I do agree with your guest. It was about his Irish Catholic faith. It was about the type of parents that raised him about that faith. And it was about the example set by his brothers and sisters. And I think he tried. The thing that is really nicely coming out in the coverage of his passing is not just all the areas of legislation that he affected over 4 to 5 decades. It's coming out nicely how many people he campaigned for besides himself and his brothers, at how many levels. And the other great thing that's coming out is that this is a man that really looked in the face of adversity in political battle, in his personal life, and in the fight for cancer at the end, and didn't twitch. He understood that life was about positive and negative things, and he stood up to negative things. And he basically helped raise the children of Robert and John. And it really came across in the last year of his life that it's a very extended family with him at the center.
Yes.
And when you got to know Senator Kennedy, you got to see that he had a joyful, engaging, real life. A man who would go down the street in Natick, Massachusetts on the 4th of July parade with no real security and go from side to side greeting the people of Natick in their 4th of July parade.
Teresa, thank you so much for calling in. I really, really appreciate it.
You're welcome, and I'm off to a great Irish Catholic wedding. I'm going to have a toast for Ted Kennedy.
All right. Very eloquent, very heartfelt. Thank you very much. Pete Hamill, could there be another Kennedy family, or has our culture become too anti-elite?
If there is, it'll probably be named Gonzalez, because I think there has to be somewhere in the tribal memory poverty. Ted Kennedy, in my head, always was the champion of people who got up after they'd been knocked down or after they knocked themselves down, which he did at Chappaquiddick. but he got up. And he won, I think, all the late rounds, which is what happened to the Irish who came here with nothing and stayed and worked and struggled and played basically by the rules and went on to another kind of life, became Americans of an amazingly gifted kind. And I think what we'll see, I won't live to see this, but my grandson will, to see generations of other families that have done the same and did not forget where they came from.
Sheila Murray, David Brooks, in his column today, reminds us of how liberal Ted Kennedy was. In his 1980 convention speech, he argued that the government should supply a job for every able-bodied American if the market couldn't, and the government should set price controls on doctors and hospitals and things like that. Did Kennedy change with the times or just become more realistic and fight for his beliefs through incremental change?
I don't think he saw a conflict between having strong ideals and a more pragmatic operating style. I think those things are often confused in Congress these days, that it's either all or nothing, and if you don't get everything you want on one bill, then why pass the bill at all? Ted Kennedy understood that in order to get to Z, you had to go through F and G and L and P and every stage in between. And I think what made him so effective, and more than just effective, so widely respected, which is really there are only a handful of people you can point to who would even rival that stature in this day and age, is that he was willing to sit down and put really important things on the table and negotiate them. That, you know, like, for instance, this public option debate in the current health care effort, that many liberals feel like the bill won't have integrity if there's not a government plan in the middle of it. Ted Kennedy would understand, I think, that the ultimate goal is really to expand insurance coverage to people who don't have it, to relieve families of this enormous and growing burden of health care. And it would not be his style, nor would I expect him to adhere so fervently to one one detail that would potentially threaten the overall goal. So he really his What made him so powerful and so really unrivaled on these particular issues, he didn't exert himself on everything, but on issues where he exerted himself, his credibility with the left was so profound, and many columnists have pointed this out in the last few days. He was really one of the few people who could go back to his own folks and say, we're going to have to give this up because the cause is greater than this one issue.
You make a point that I think hasn't been made very much in the last few days, and that is that not only was his political genius, the ability to reach across the aisle and get Republicans to do things that they may not have wanted to do in terms of compromise. But he was then able to go back to the liberal base of the Democratic Party and get them to agree to things that they may have said no to. Are you saying that?
Yes, it was always such an odd thing about Kennedy that here was this man with this enormous, you know, past and huge legacy, and yet people didn't really see him as ambitious. He was so widely respected within his own club that somehow people never second-guessed when he came to them and said, we need to pass this Medicare drug benefit, which just turned out to be a disaster, and that he separated himself from eventually. He made some tactical mistakes of his own. He, you know, this education reform bill under President Bush turned out to be a big disappointment. A lot of liberals voted for it because of Ted Kennedy, said so at the time, and later regretted it, just as he did. But his stature was such that he could convince people to go along on things they would never otherwise go along on.
Mark in Stuyvesant Town, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes, I just wanted to speak to, you know, Ted Kennedy and his legacy. One reason he definitely was the most important Kennedy is that I think because he lived so long and because we got to know him so well, He was a flawed human being. He made a lot of mistakes. I don't want to bring them up at this point, but we saw him persevere through all those mistakes and accomplish great things. And I just think that, not contradiction, but we're all human. We all make mistakes, and we got to see Ted's flaws maybe too much, and yet he never let it stop him from accomplishing very important work.
Yeah, I guess, although, people are calling up with things, obviously Chappaquiddick. I can't believe how many people want to call and say things about Joe Kennedy that run the gamut, the father of Ted. Somebody's calling, and we're not going to have time to put him on the air, but I'll make his point that Teddy was unsavory in the sexual assault accusation situation against his nephew, that as Edward Klein, the critical biographer, wrote, Teddy appeared to get himself tangled in a web of lies and contradictions. So there were a good few things that he had to overcome in order to maintain his reputation to pursue his public policy side. Pete, can you hear me?
Yeah, oh, I can, yeah.
Do you want to comment on that at all? I mean, the dark side is fairly dark in some instances.
Yeah, there are dark, because he comes from a different period. Faulkner once said about Mississippi that he loved it in spite of, not because. And there were some people in our history that you can cherish. For example, Barry Goldwater, I never voted for him in my life. I certainly respected him. He was himself. He said what he believed. Now, some of the stuff that Teddy was involved in, either marginally or directly, are a different level of things. But that's why I think his story is so interesting, not just his life, but the story, because it's a tale of redemption, as you're hearing from so many of the listeners. It's about a guy who said, I will not retreat and die. I will do what I can to make up for what I did wrong. And I think he did that. That's what I mean by, I think Teddy, like the Irish themselves, won all the late rounds. And that sometimes in the making of a life is far more important than individual episodes out of those lives.
Shayla, is anyone playing the Ted Kennedy role in the health negotiations right now? We keep hearing, for example, that Max Baucus, chairman of the Finance Committee, is leading the bipartisan effort to get a compromise bill. But Baucus from Montana doesn't begin as the liberal that Kennedy would have in these talks. How much of a parallel is there or not?
Well, Max Baucus is from a big Montana ranching family, but that's about where it ends. I don't think that there's not a replacement character or individual who is going to step in and assume the Ted Kennedy role anytime soon. But I do think that in the last few days, senators have had a chance to reflect on the dynamic that Teddy Kennedy tried to create during big debates. And they're wondering how they can sort of reinstate that dynamic in this debate. A really interesting moment for the Senate, a real interesting challenge for President Obama, who was elected, after all, on the promise of sort of bringing that Ted Kennedy approach to reality, on a broader scale of reaching out across the aisle and trying to do big, ambitious bills in a bipartisan way. That's not been the way this debate has unfolded, and much to the regret of many Democrats and Republicans. And I think people are looking at this moment as an opportunity maybe to restart the effort. I just got off the phone with a prominent Republican senator a few minutes ago before the show who is very eager to come back to town, talk to the folks at the White House, talk to some of his Democratic colleagues to see if they can't move this process forward in a more constructive way. This person has been on the sidelines, as have many Republicans who you would think would be more engaged in this debate and really actually want something to happen. I think that's the – Ted Kennedy would have understood and did understand just intrinsically that the forces are with passing a bill – right now. People want to change the healthcare system. Republicans do as well as Democrats. Why not figure out a way to pull those forces together and do something constructive with it? And, you know, that sounds like a simple thing, but that is just about the hardest thing you can do in Washington.
Shayla Murray, congressional reporter for The Washington Post. Pete Hamill, journalist, columnist, novelist, friend of the Kennedy family. Thank you both for spending so much time with us on this occasion.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, coming up in just a minute. 150 years of writing about New York in the New York Times. Has the city changed with the times? Has the times changed with the city? Stay with us.